Talking today with Clay Pope, the executive director of the Oklahoma Association of Conservation Districts. Clay, let's talk about several things. Statewide, first of all, statewide, I know that we now have, with drought conditions continue to linger and maybe intensify in the days to come, we're starting to see a few dollars flow of disaster assistance from the state of Oklahoma. Tell me how that's working.
Well, as you know, last year the legislature and the governor set up the Emergency Drought Fund in Oklahoma. It was the first time the state had ever put together a pot of money and the mechanism to actually deal with drought in the state. The governor has to declare a drought emergency. She declared a drought emergency toward the end of 2013 for four counties in southwest Oklahoma and one in the Panhandle. There's an Emergency Drought Commission that was formed, which was the Secretary of Agriculture, head of the Water Resources Board, head of the Conservation Commission. Those three then determined how the money that was in the fund would be divvied up as far as the purposes that the fund describes, things like cost share to agriculture producers for emergency livestock, for water, pasture repair, things along those lines, money for communities to deal with infrastructure issues and water conservation issues, and then, of course, rural fire protection. On the conservation side, it was determined there was $3 million in the pot. It was determined to take about $375,000 of that and send it out through the local conservation districts. The districts in the areas that were declared drought, again, it was four counties in southwest Oklahoma and Texas County in the Panhandle. They put in the priorities on what they thought the money should go for, made the recommendations to the fund. It was a locally driven process. It was determined by that commission then on how that money would be divided up. It went out to those counties. Those local conservation districts have put the advertisements out to the producers to let them know that money was available. And the money's out there on the ground now. So we're glad that that money's gone out the door. It was a rather short turnaround in time frame. Hopefully getting some help out there. Water for livestock is the primary use of the water, but there's also money going for pasture repair, trying to help deal with some of the damage that the drought's causing some of our pasture and rangeland. $375,000 is not that much money. It's really a drop in the bucket, but at least it's a start. And, you know, you hope the rains will come and we won't need any more. The concern that I have, and even stepping away for the fund from a second, I'm concerned that we are seeing this drought intensify again and that we are moving back into the teeth of the drought. You know, there's been some rain here in central Oklahoma, in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. And when the metropolitan areas get that moisture, it's easy to forget that the drought's still out there. And if you're from southwest Oklahoma or the Panhandle, you never got out of it. And, you know, the rest of the state, we had that moisture that we had in the late summer and the fall. And we were starting to see, you know, we had a time frame there where we had some relief. But we're slowly slipping right back into that again. And if an El Nino doesn't set up, I'm really concerned we're going to be right back where we were this time, you know, 2 years ago, maybe even worse shape. And the concern is that we're ready for it as producers, that our policymakers understand that we're looking at what options are out there. And then again, we as landowners, as farmers and ranchers, are mindful of the challenges that we're going to be facing and are trying to make those preparations accordingly. Because, you know, you think about the 1930s, you think about the drought of the 30s, everybody thinks it was this long 9-10 year drought. Actually, it was three droughts that had rain events in between them. And that's what the concern is. We may be seeing similar situations set up again, only a little bit deeper and a little bit drier. So the hope is that we do see some rain, but if we don't, we need to be prepared.
What sort of things are the conservation districts, your folks, as they work with landowners, what are they advising right now? In other words, how do they help set up a plan that helps a guy, you know, basically keep as much of his stuff intact as possible?
Well, again, you know, looking at the programs, we've got the emergency drought money that went to those counties that we talked a little bit out on the state side. But through programs like EQIP, WIP, CSP, trying to do the conservation work to address problems like soil erosion, trying to make sure that you can hold on to as much moisture as you possibly can through water conservation, trying to do things as far as good pasture management, looking at all of these options. But even more than that now, one of the big initiatives that we're really pushing is this concept to soil health. Everything that we do goes back to that idea of building soil health. And if you're thinking from just drought specifically, if you can rebuild the organic matter in your soil, you can, for every 1% increase, you can triple that soil's water holding capacity. And the nice thing about it is the same practices to increase that organic matter to hold on to your moisture better are the same practices that you want to do to control soil erosion. And, you know, we've seen, You know, I was thinking the other night when we had the big cold front come through central Oklahoma, we didn't get any rain out of it, but we got a heck of a lot of wind. And I was sitting here thinking, thank goodness that we did learn a lot of the lessons in the 30s and the 50s, because while we have seen some dust blowing, been some pretty good dust storms up in northwest Oklahoma especially, but we haven't seen anything comparable to what we saw in the 30s or even the 50s. And we want to make sure that we don't slide back into that. So working with producers to understand what's out there, looking at their options, and then looking at the overall plan of how you can restore that organic matter, keep keep that cover on the land. And at the same time, also, when you do get moisture, increase your productivity over time and help your bottom line. Those are the kind of things that we're looking at, and hopefully we're going to be able to accomplish that goal. And as we get, hopefully we won't get into the teeth of the drought again, but if we do, that we've got the ability to work with those producers to try to ride through it a little bit better.
One of the things that we're hearing right now, obviously, one thing that's happening that a lot of groups are commenting on, Environmental Protection Agency announcing this Waters of the U.S. definition. A lot of conservation practices, they've worked with USDA to try to get those in place to be exceptions to any sort of regulation on top of the Clean Water Act. How do you see that playing out as far as Oklahoma is concerned?
Well, I think, you know, from our standpoint, we were very happy to see that EPA did recognize the conservation practices, that they were working with USDA, that USDA was involved in the process to try to lessen any burden on agriculture producers. Flip side of that is we do favor voluntary programs, so you always get a little concerned if something could lead toward additional regulation, because I really believe that the best way to address these programs is through voluntary action. You know, I've told it to you before, as an ag producer myself, you can lead me anywhere, but I'll be damned if I'll be put. If you'll work with me, you show me there's a problem, but then help me to address the problem, because if I can address this issue, it's not just helping me, it's helping the folks downstream too. You know, EPA themselves came out with numbers that said nationwide, now this is not Oklahoma specific, but nationwide, for every dollar that you spend on best management practices in a watershed to address non-point source pollution, you're saving the cities and towns on average downstream roughly $20 in treatment costs. So you stop and think about that. If I'm putting practice on the ground on my land that's helping to protect that water, I'm saving those towns over $20 in treatment costs for every dollar that's spent in a cost share situation where I'm putting my own money on the ground. Government's helping, but I'm also meeting that with a percentage of the overall cost. If I'm doing that, there needs to be that assistance in the form of cost share, technical assistance, and then recognition of what those producers are doing to protect the ecosystem for everyone. You know, it's kind of a mixed bag on this. We're still waiting to see what the fallout is on EPA, on the regulation, the proposed rule from EPA, and how it's going to be implemented. Obviously, anytime you're talking about regulations, we favor the voluntary approach, but we are happy to see that EPA did sit down and talk with USDA, so that's a step in the right direction. We'll see how the rest of it shakes out. You know, looking at some of the other things that are out there, the lesser prairie chicken, kind of same thing. We're tickled to see that U.S. Fish and Wildlife recognize what farmers and ranchers are doing out there in the countryside. We're still letting the states be the lead on what needs to be done. We're partnering with USDA on these things. Again, a positive development. Same time, I was hoping that we were going to get a not warranted listing, not a threatened listing. Now, threatened's better than endangered. But anytime that happens, one, you're disappointed that listing was made, concerned again on the regulatory approach. Now I think our focus has to be on getting the bird off of the list completely. Producers in Oklahoma have done yeoman's work on conservation practices on the ground. We're going to continue working with them, making sure that they've got the protection under the CCAAs and the other umbrella programs to make sure that producers who are doing good work on their land, that they don't have to worry about the hammer ever dropping on them, trying to provide some financial help to help with that burden and also reward them for what they're doing. Because if they do these things and it can help mitigate what other folks are doing on the ground, that should be recognized, because you're allowing that economic activity to continue, and that's something we think those producers should be rewarded for. And then having an overall strategy on how in the heck to get this thing off of the list, because that is a concern. So we're going to, you know, again, a mixed bag. We're glad to see U.S. Fish and Wildlife recognize what producers are doing, glad to see them partnering with USDA, glad to see them working with the states. Disappointed that we got a listing. We'll analyze where we're at and move on from here.